Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
This is Classical Ideas with Greg Soden. Welcome to Classical Ideas. This is Greg Soden. Today's episode is about an example of important dialogue that took place 800 years ago during a time of incredible violence. The event is when St. Francis of Assisi crossed the front lines of war during the Fifth Crusade for a face-to-face meeting and attempted converting the Sultan of Egypt, Malik al-Kamil, in Damietta, Egypt. I'm a relatively unlearned person regarding the Crusades, and the viciousness of these battles stunned me repeatedly as I was learning about it in the book The Saint and the Sultan, The Crusades, Islam, and Francis of Assisi's Mission of Peace by journalist Paul Moses. The book and the encounter of these two men, which was peaceful amidst the maelstrom of war, has many lessons it can still teach us today. When cross-cultural suspicions and insularity seem to be on the rise, rather than the decline. I have to give a shout out to one of the listeners, Mark Janda from Santa Cruz, California. He wrote to me and suggested I reach out to Paul Moses about doing an episode to commemorate the upcoming 800th anniversary of the meeting of the Saint and the Sultan. So thank you to Mark Janda for the fantastic suggestion. Today's conversation is with Paul Moses. Moses is a former Newsday editor and senior religion writer. He is a retired professor of journalism, and he taught at Brooklyn College and the City University of New York Graduate School of Journalism. He was the lead writer on a Newsday team that won the Pulitzer Prize. He is the author of the Doubleday book, The Saint and the Sultan, the topic of today's conversation, as well as the book, An Unlikely Union, A Love-Hate Story of New York's Irish and Italians, out from New York University Press. You can follow Moses' work on Facebook at facebook.com/PaulBMoses. There's also a PBS documentary that premiered in December 2017 about the encounter between St. Francis of Assisi and Sultan Malik al-Kamil, which premiered last year. So without further delay, here is my conversation with Paul Moses. Welcome to Classical Ideas. This is Greg Soden. I'm here today with author Paul Moses, author of The Saint and the Sultan, among other books. Paul, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Greg. Great to be with you.
Can you briefly introduce yourself and a little bit about your work for the audience?
Yes. Well, first of all, the book I wrote is The Saint and the Sultan, The Crusades, Islam, and Francis of Assisi's Mission of Peace. It was published by Doubleday in 2009. And I am a retired professor of journalism. I taught at City University of New York, Brooklyn College, And before that, I was a New York City newspaper man. I've written two books and co-authored a third. So there's a quick introduction. Oh, and I still write regularly. I'm a contributing writer for Commonweal magazine, and I write elsewhere.
Fantastic. So the reason why I got in touch with you is because this summer is the 799th anniversary of a very important meeting in world history, in world religion, in like culture and civilization. And that is the meeting between Saint Francis of Assisi and Sultan Al-Kamil of Egypt during the Crusades. So just to start us off, who are these two men as you see them?
Well, Francis of Assisi is one of the most famous Christian saints. He lived in central Italy. He lived a life of voluntary poverty. He was very interested in peacemaking. And as part of that, he decided to travel to Egypt during the Fifth Crusade, which is where he met Sultan Malik al-Kamil, who was the nephew of one of the great warriors, Saladin, and who was Sultan of Egypt, and he ruled Egypt very well as Sultan and Viceroy for some 40 years. Just to situate us, we're in the early 13th century, that's the 1200s, and Francis and the Sultan met in 1219. So yes, we're coming up on the 799th, and I think there are probably already plans in the works for the 800th.
Wonderful. So I've had a bunch of ideas for writing books in my life, but I've never actually gone through with it yet. And because it's a tremendous undertaking to put together a book with the amount of research that goes into it and the amount of travel. So something about this event must have been really drawing you in. So what was it about the Crusades that drew you in to where you felt compelled to write a book about this particular event in history?
Yeah, I saw a reference to it. And I guess it's kind of a devotional book about St. Francis called The Little Flowers of St. Francis that was published in, you know, around in the early 1400s. So, early 1300s. And so it's about 100 years after Francis lived. And it has many chapters and acts of Francis throughout it, and they're a little magical in a lot of ways, some parts of that work. And I came across this short section that Francis met the Sultan of Egypt. And I was like, gee, Francis went to Egypt and met the Sultan during the Crusade? And I got very curious about that. And the basics, so I started to check to see if it was really true. And yes, it did really happen. And what's kind of interesting about it is that they were on two enemy sides. They were enemies in the middle of a war, a terrible war, and yet they kind of hit it off. So I thought, this is really interesting. I want to explore this, find out about it, and try to tell the story of it. So that's how it began.
Did you grow up in either of these traditions? Like, had you heard of St. Francis whenever you were a kid or anything like that?
Yeah, I'm a Catholic, and my confirmation name is Francis. I think more after an uncle of mine than the saint, but I was aware that there was this saint who went around in a very cheery way, based on the movies that I had seen. So I knew about him. Certainly we know about, if you know, in Catholic neighborhoods, you often see statues of Francis out on people's lawns with, usually a bird in his hand and so forth. So yeah, no, I was definitely aware of Francis, but I wanted to, understand him as a historical figure. So that was the challenge there, and put him in the context of the times in which he lived, which were very turbulent.
Yeah, and he was a central figure in my own education as well. Whenever I was growing up in like Monday night Catholic school classes leading up to confirmation and everything, so he was a big figure in my life as well. Which is why your book is so useful, because whenever you're a kid in school, I didn't really tend to pay attention to all the lessons, so I feel like I'm learning all the stuff now that I should have whenever I was young. So you've served a great role in my own education in that regard.
Thank you.
I'm playing catch up. So on page 3 of this book, you called the meeting between the Christian St. Francis and the Muslim Sultan, quote, a glimmer of hope in our own time. And on the back cover, the well-known Jesuit, Father James Martin, said the book comes just as we need it most. So how does this meeting between a Muslim Sultan and a Christian monk have lessons to teach us in our world in 2018?
Yeah, there's so much misunderstanding on both sides between Christians and Muslims, misunderstandings about their religion, even the history of their conflicts, and what their religions actually say about each other, I think. So here's an occasion where, under really bad circumstances, in the middle of a war, a Christian and a Muslim were just able to sit down and talk to each other in a civil way. So that, you know, should serve as a model for us today also.
I mean, it really jumps out the way that the viciousness that's described throughout this book, and then the way that these two guys just seem to like hang out and talk, and they're just people together in the midst of this maelstrom surrounding them. I mean, it's super impressive.
Yeah, it jumped out at me. But, you know, it's interesting, if you read the medieval chronicles, they're pretty graphic with their violence. Made use of that in the book because I wanted to capture what I was reacting against, and also the Sultan too, because the Sultan actively pursued peace treaties.
Yeah. So one of the things that really jumps out at me in the book is this concept of what's called the true cross. And I'm just now kind of studying the Crusades. Like, I feel like this is a giant blank spot in my own knowledge. But the true cross is something that's really interesting to me. So can you explain, like, what is the true cross?
Okay. The true cross is believed to be the cross on which Christ was crucified outside Jerusalem. And it's said to have been discovered by St. Helena. Helena was the mother of Emperor Constantine. So we're back in the early 300s, around 326 or so. She went over to the Holy Land and is said to have found this cross. And it kind of gets divided into pieces, as relics often were and are. And eventually there's many places that say they have a little piece of the true cross. So it enters into the story of Francis and the Sultan, because during the Fifth Crusade, the Christian army's leader, he was really the Pope's representative at the scene, a Cardinal Pelagius, that he had a piece of this true cross, what they thought was a piece of the true cross, that he brought as kind of a token to bless the effort, to bless the war, to show God wanted this war, and that, you know, God supposedly wanted the war, and God wanted was gonna bless the crusade, and when they went out to battle, the cardinal took this out there, and on the side of the battle, different priests would pray. The reason it worked into the book was that Francis himself would not go out with them. He stayed back in the camp and prayed there, but he didn't want to go out and see the battle. And if you know about Francis, you know that he was a great follower of the cross, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, you know, that there's a lot of things that, you know, that you kind of read between the lines a little bit. If Francis didn't go out there and follow the cross, which would have meant everything to Francis, it's pretty clear he didn't like the way this was being done. And so that's kind of, that's how it enters into the book. He Francis was a great follower of the cross, but he wasn't going to follow in that way. The cross was being used.
Yeah, and just a second ago, you sort of alluded to the fact that the Sultan is a kind of like an olive branch offer. He keeps offering these peace deals throughout the entire book and throughout the entire story, and they keep getting rejected. So the Sultan comes off as like a much more humane figure in the book. What was your reaction to learning about these multiple rejected peace deals that the Sultan offers that the Christian leadership turns down?
Well, I tried to understand the strategies. You know, the Sultan, he had reasons for wanting to end the war, but I think he didn't see the point of what was going on either. And on the Crusader side, the argument was being made that the Sultan was willing to give the Christians control of Jerusalem, and the Christians felt that they needed to conquer Egypt also in the area kind of surrounding Jerusalem, so that they could hold Jerusalem and not have it taken back. And, you know, their strategy was bad too. So I think there's a mix of good intentions on the Sultan's part based on his understanding of Islam also, and just good strategy, you know, a certain sense of wisdom that there was no point in pursuing the war. The Sultan had other worries. There was an army coming from the east, the Mongol army, and he was more worried about them than the Crusaders. So he was kind of taking a middle course. The amazing thing was, to me, eventually the Christians went too far into Egypt and they didn't know the terrain, and what happens is that the Sultan ultimately wins this war by having the level of the Nile adjusted so that the Christian soldiers are standing in mud up to their waist and are totally defeated. They're just like dead ducks there. And the Muslim army could have slaughtered them all. But that's when the Sultan accepts a peace deal. The Christians come to him now for peace. He agrees. And he gives them food so they don't starve, and then helps them to get out of his country as quickly as he can get them out. And the Crusaders are absolutely amazed, and they think that the Sultan must have secretly been a Christian. That's not really so. The Sultan was definitely a Muslim, and took his took the teachings seriously. There are teachings that deal with how to handle a defeated enemy, and he followed those. So
one of the things
that's why we see him as, I see him also as a peacemaker in addition to Francis.
Right. So it took this combination of these two guys, because to me, Francis seems to be like fundamentally at odds with what's going on in the Crusades, because he's like a totally anti-violent pacifist. And he seems like throughout the book to like strive to be as Christ-like as possible. And he's obviously seeing un-Christ-like tendencies in his fellow Christians of the day. So what do you make of this like dichotomy as like, was Francis much of an outlier during this time period, or am I misreading that?
You know, it's both. You know, Francis is a man of his time. He sees the world in very religious terms, as you would expect someone in his period. Yet, I think he saw things that were wrong with his society, too. I think he was actually a pretty shrewd judge of his society, even though he didn't like to portray himself as smart at all. He was always, he was not interested in book learning, but I still think he saw what was going on. I wouldn't want to say there were other people in his time too who also were opposed to the crusade and tried to separate themselves from some of the greed and the violence that fed into it, and Francis saw that too. So yes, he's a man of his time, and yes, he was able to step back and critique what was going on around him. Does that answer your question, you think?
Or? Absolutely. Like, do you see... So think about, like, in our modern world today, where you're sitting in New York and where I'm sitting in Missouri. Like, are there any world events or historical figures or people today that you would liken to, like, a modern-day Francis and Sultan, like, coming together from very different perspectives and just realizing, like, how much they have in common and how, like, useless a lot of problems in the world today seem to be? Like, can we, like, draw a parallel between a couple modern people and Francis and the Sultan?
I mean, it's hard to, and it's hard to do that. I can say that there are people who, you know, try to cross barriers and see the other as a human being. We just saw that amazing thing in North Korea where the president of South Korea really has been reaching out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a complex situation. I don't want to compare anyone to Francis or the Sultan, but we do see an attempt there to reach over barriers. And Francis was so unique, you know, that it'd be hard to compare anyone to him. I mean, you can say that Mother Teresa had some aspects of Francis' outlook in terms of poverty and connecting with people on a person-to-person basis. But I don't think, you know, it's hard to draw direct comparisons because I can't think of when she got involved in trying to, you know, settle a war. So yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
One of the things in the book that you did a lot that I really enjoyed is you seem to like almost relish in like pointing out some of the embellished representations of St. Francis of Assisi. Like, did you enjoy pointing out some of the misconceptions?
Yeah, I think, you know, the investigative reporter in me probably did enjoy that. As you follow Francis's story through, it really kind of gets warped by the politics of the Franciscan order, and there were a lot of controversies within the order, serious ones that almost resulted in the order being shut down, serious ones that resulted in some Franciscans being, I think, unfairly executed by, the Pope in the 1300s. So this all had an effect on how Francis was portrayed, and basically, some of the earlier accounts kind of capture his kind of delightful quirkiness, but as it goes along, he becomes a lot more restricted and you know, not as interesting, I think. So yeah, but this thing with his meeting with the Sultan is difficult for the early writers to handle because a lot of the early writings focus on showing that Francis was a great saint, which he was. But I think by the logic of the time, if he wasn't enthusiastic about the Crusades, if he was opposed to the Crusades, how could he be a great saint?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Today we may look at that as a plus, but not at that time. So how he related to the Sultan is really a difficult subject for them to take on. I think that the most reliable, there are many sources, but the most reliable source was actually by some letters written by a bishop who was there on the Crusade, a big supporter of the Crusade, a French bishop, and he wrote home. He had heard something about Francis going out to meet with the Sultan, and it's just a short passage, but he shows that it was definitely a friendly meeting. And later accounts try to make it appear more confrontational. So I had to kind of analyze those accounts. And then, so that was an important part of the book.
I could tell that you were having fun with it as well. Like every time, like whenever I noticed you had pointed out something that was like an embellishment or something in history, I kind of had a little chuckle because those are the kinds of things that if I were writing the book, I would just like totally love those moments because I would feel so productive as a writer. One of the things I also really like about the book is your personal touch. Do you need to get some water for a second?
No, I'm okay. Yeah.
Okay. So you seem to have done a lot of traveling with the book. Mm-hmm. And many of your photographs are included in the book. And I really enjoy that because, like, as a reader, I can picture you in the spots where a lot of the events are taking place. What were some of your favorite days of traveling while you were researching the book?
The absolute best was the day that I went to the old mosque in Damietta. And it was because I knew it was a place where everybody I was writing about had been at one point or another. Excuse me. Yeah, I'm sorry there.
Oh, it's totally fine. I have all the editing capability in the world, so yeah, all this is going
just
out.
Take that water. I did need that water.
Absolutely. So please do.
Yeah.
It's springtime, and those things happen.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from, but can I go back on?
Yeah.
Okay. So at the this ancient mosque in Damietta, Francis had gone in there after the Crusaders conquered it. The Sultan went there at the end of after he took the city back. And this is a city that's at the mouth of the Nile. So anyway, I went there and I was given a tour of it by the Egyptian Antiquities Authority. So that, and they were, this mosque had fallen into terrible disrepair, but they were doing a whole massive renovation, restoring it to what it would have looked like in the 600s. And, you know, beautiful work with the tiles and stuff. And so that I think was the most fascinating thing, because I was really, pretty much all the major characters in the book had come through that space at one time or another. And I loved, you know, being in Cairo and seeing the medieval areas of Cairo. I didn't go to the pyramids or anything like that. I was in the Middle Ages, you know.
Nice.
And then, of course, Assisi is a great place to visit, and I spent a week there. And again, I wanted to go to some of the places, and one of the places people don't normally go when they visit Assisi is the Hill of Collestrata, and that's a hill a few miles outside the town. And in the book, it's really an important place, because when Francis was a young man, he went to war for his town against the neighboring town, and he would have been like a cavalryman, like a knight on a horseback, and he had a horrible experience there. His side, you know, was massacred in this battle. They were inexperienced sons of merchants competing with noblemen from the next city over, Perugia, and Francis was taken prisoner then for a year. So to visit that place where this battle was, and to see some signs of Francis there. Later, there was a little leper hospice there, and Francis had gone there to help lepers. And that building's still there, only it was converted into a school.
Oh, wow.
So it's still there. And the hill is still there, and you can see it, and it's kind of in a strategic spot overlooking the river. And at the very bottom is a shopping mall. So I enjoyed that too. Those are some of the special places. It's just nice when you're, you know, writing about something that happened so long ago to, you know, connect with the people you're writing about through the actual place that you know they were.
Yeah. So as you go through your life today in our modern world, how would you say that the lives and the encounter of Francis and the Sultan, like, inspire you in your day-to-day life? So you've, like, lived with their story now for several years. How do they inspire you each day?
Yeah, I mean, Francis tells me that, you know, you can always go to somebody to talk about it, that you should reach out, you should try to connect. That's what he did. You know, he wasn't afraid. He had to literally cross a battlefield, you know, to do that. And, you know, sometimes in our own lives we have to do the same thing. The Sultan, I think he exhibits a lot of wisdom. He could have just dismissed Francis when he came to his court. He could have had him imprisoned or even executed if he wanted, maybe in retribution for something done to one of his soldiers, but he was wise and kind of attuned to his own faith, and he was under a lot of pressure. So, I think they both can give you some models to follow on a personal basis.
How does, I know the Sultan was surrounded by Sufi mystic advisors. How does Sufism fit into this story for the way that the Sultan handles the war, maybe how the way the Sultan talks to Francis? Like, where does Sufism fit into this?
Well, Sufism is kind of a mystic strand of Islam. And, it's quicker to maybe recognize connections to mysticism and the other major religions also. It's a tricky thing. The Sultan was intrigued by this because he had a Sufi poet who lived in his court, and his advisor may have had some connection. His religious advisor may have had some connection to Sufism also, but I wouldn't want to come across that this was just like some narrow version of Islam that the Sultan was following. That's not like the mainstream. The Sultan was a mainstream Sunni Muslim. He was well versed in the laws of a certain school of law and all that. So I think it has an influence on him. But I wouldn't want to overstate it either.
Mm-hmm. And so today in the world, we also hear the word interfaith a lot. It's used a lot with describing conferences, like interfaith conferences where religious leaders from many religions all get together and comment on the world together. So do you think that Francis and the Sultan are sort of pioneers in what today we would think of as interfaith communication?
I think they're often held up as that kind of model for, maybe I put it in their case, inter-religious dialogue. But just keep in mind, in the period when they lived, no, that would have been a totally foreign concept.
Mm-hmm.
I think Francis is relating person to person. Francis wanted to convert the Sultan, right? We probably wouldn't begin inter-religious dialogue on those grounds.
Right.
Nowadays, right? But I still think that they're a valid model if we don't try to put too fine a point on it, because they did, reach out to each other and listen to each other and talked about faith to each other. And so in some ways you could say it's a starting point, but they, in their era, if we started talking about interreligious relations, I don't think they would have, it would have meant anything to them. So I would say yes, they are kind of a model, for us, but yet, we have to remember that we're taking concepts from our own time. We can't really transfer it to theirs.
If the Sultan and Francis were standing right in front of you, what would you ask them? What was left unanswered for you?
Well, I'd love to know the whole conversation that went on between them, because we don't have that. Mm-hmm. We just have little bits and pieces, and so we really don't know. I think I say in the book there's no video of it. So that's what I'd like to know. The first thing is, everything that was said, and proceed from there.
So, Paul Moses, the author of The Saint and the Sultan, The Crusades, Islam, and Francis of Assisi's Mission of Peace, it's been such a pleasure talking to you today about your book. Can you say where people can find you if they want to know more?
Let's see. I don't have a website right now. Let's see. I guess my email is paulmoses@optonline.net. That's where I'm reachable. And I should probably add that there's a docudrama that uses a lot of research from the book. I'm interviewed in it called it's called, a little different from the title of my book, The Sultan and the Saint, instead of the other way around, that PBS did. So that's out there also if people are interested.
And what's your other book?
I have a more recent book called An Unlikely Union, The Love-Hate Story of New York's Irish and Italians. And it's also about groups that were at odds with each other, two of the major ethnic groups in New York City's history, and how they overcame the barriers that were between them.
Excellent. Well, Mr. Moses, thank you so much for coming on Classical Ideas. It's been a real pleasure talking to you today.
It's a pleasure for me too, Greg. Good luck with this.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Classical Ideas is produced by me, Greg Soden. Music on Classical Ideas is performed and composed by Derek Strybing. You can find his music at www.wearewarmmusic.com. If you would like to support this show, please subscribe or leaving a rating in iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, or anywhere you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.